If you are a fan of the Dive Bar Rockstar podcast and would like to help support the show, there's a great way that you can do that and start a new fashion trend. We have a new merchandise page on the website, which features t-shirts and hoodies that are available for sale on Amazon. Just click on merchandise in the top menu and all of the links will be there, or go directly to divebarrockstar.com/merchandise. Get started early on your Christmas shopping at divebarrockstar.com. Welcome to the Dive Bar Rockstar Podcast, a show exploring the lives of professional musicians of all types, touring musicians, recording artists, songwriters, engineers, bar bands, wedding bands, and anyone making their living in the music industry. Whether you've dreamed of being a professional or you already are one, this is the podcast for you. I'm your host, Eric Baines, and I hope that you not only find some entertainment here, but also some helpful tips, trade secrets, and ideas that will help you achieve your dreams. Well, I'm coming to you this time from Kansas City, Missouri, home of the Super Bowl champion Chiefs. And I grew up in Denver, so the Chiefs are always a rival. So sorry, Denver folks. But my wife is from Springfield, Missouri. So through her, I've grown to enjoy watching them, and especially Patrick Mahomes, I think. But at any rate, it's nice to be here. The weather is amazing. There are some weird sounds coming from the hotel room. So if you hear anything, please excuse that. And it's kind of an exciting day, I think. It's episode 40, which is a good round number. I know there's a lot of podcasts with many, many more episodes. And in the podcast world, it's not the greatest accomplishment, but I believe in celebrating the little accomplishments, you know? So I'm gonna. And it's gonna be a really different episode. So if you remember back on episode 14, and it's always up there, you can go check it out. If you're an avid listener, you might remember that in the year 2020, I had a guest on named Gary Grantham, aka Gig. And he brought up the idea of switching places and him interviewing me. And at the time, I said, let's make it episode 50, thinking I would get there at a reasonable amount of time. 3 years later, I've only made it to 40 because, you know, we all started to get back to work and time goes away. And I had a child and things of that nature. So I decided that we should move it up to episode 40. It's still a good round number. And something to be somewhat celebrated, I guess. So here we are, episode 40, and we're going to do it. So for those of you that haven't listened to episode 14 or haven't heard it in a while, Gary Grantham is a major part of the Los Angeles tribute band scene, and he's put together some really amazing tribute shows over the years, like Deja Vu, which is a musical retrospective of Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and many others. I met him doing, I was subbing as Don Henley at first for the TLR Experience, the Eagles music band that he's been doing for a long time. And a very, very great band. I would highly recommend you checking them out if you're in town or if they're in your town, because they travel all over the place, even in foreign countries. So look for them. And, you know, Gary is a very articulate guy, and he's chock full of information. So he's kind of the perfect guy to do this. And he was also the first one to ask. There's been several people that have asked to do this and several fans that have asked to hear this, which is another reason I thought I would move it up and we'll just do it. So here we are. It's going to be crazy. It's going to be wild. It's a little vulnerable for me to turn over the show to a certain degree. But I'm going to do it, and I think it's going to be fun. So please enjoy Gary Grantham's conversation with me, Eric Baines.
What I know of the inception of the Dive Bar Rockstar podcast is it was born of the meat of the pandemic, and you didn't have anything to do.
Right.
And so in that same year, there are two things I know that you created. One was a brand new human being.
That is true. That is very true.
Because again, you were just looking for stuff to do.
Right, exactly.
And so you co-created Lennon, who's what? I want to say like 26 months?
He's two. He's actually today is his Yeah, the 26-month birthday.
26-month birthday,
that
yes.
That was a great guess.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
You've done your research.
Of course I have. And you gave birth to the Dive Bar Rockstar podcast.
That's true.
So
that's
first of all, I want to slobber about it for a moment before I ask you about it.
Okay.
It's really good. It's really good. And you know something? When you intro every episode, one of the things that you say, and I'm going to paraphrase, but you basically say that if you're a musician who is just starting out and you have hopes and dreams of earning your living in the music, in any facet of the music industry, you're a working professional and have been for many years, or anything in between, this podcast is for you. And it absolutely is, man. Every episode I've listened to is relatable. You know, I listen to people that have had very, very different careers and a different professional experience from my own. I mean, you talk to people with storied lives and then also people like me. But like the other day, literally Sunday, I was listening to episode 39 with Liliana de los Reyes.
Right.
And, you know, her career is still relatively new compared to so many of the people that you've spoken to in this podcast.
Right.
I was driving to a show, a matinee of a musical I was supposed to see. And it was about a 35-minute drive or a 40-minute drive. And yet I stopped and I had to go in, but I didn't want to put it down. And that's been my experience with every episode of this podcast that I've listened to. Sometimes I just think, look, Eric's a friend. I know he has a really good podcast. Hey, I'm going to listen. And then I get into it and it's a page turner because you bring out wonderful stories in your guests and you do the whole thing really well. And that is not easy to do because interviewing is a craft.
Well, thank you for all of that. And you are obviously my target audience.
Well, yeah,
because those are all the things that I would like someone to say about the podcast, you know. And the thing is too, lately there's other podcasts that are like mine that are a little bit more career, like this is steps to get somewhere. And I've realized over time that like that's not really what I enjoy about this. It's more the feature story, you know. It's more the talking about people's lives and their stories, you know, the humanness of it all, you know, the human interest vibe versus the here, you know. So it's a little bit under the guise of here's how you can get your career going, and it absolutely is. But at the same time, it's such an interesting, especially after now 39 episodes, it's such an interesting business because you can approach it in so many different ways. So yes, these things worked for me, these things work for that person, but it's not necessarily going to work for you, but it's a good place to start, or some things are going to exactly work for you. You know what I mean? So, but what's interesting, and I think if you pay attention, like it's just the passion that everyone has, the head, that the type of thinking you have to really be successful. It's not even so much about specifically your actions as much as getting your brain in the right place and just figuring out who you are as a human, whether you can handle this business or not, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. You know, this podcast has precision. Everything about it has precision. The interviews themselves are very free and loose and free form, and you create that platform that allow people to have these wonderful, long, easy, free form conversations with you because they happen so organically. But everything else about it, the timing, you know, the way you hit the post on your, you know, your intro with your music bed, it's all very precise, and that doesn't happen accidentally. But could you have possibly known when you were first just creating something for you to do that this podcast would end up being of such service or resonate so much with people?
Right. Well, I mean, you got to hope when you're doing something, but absolutely, like, it's all extremely deliberate, you know, and edited. And like, I take a lot of pride in that. You know, it's the other thing too, is like, I love it when people come over because the sound of Zoom drives me freaking insane. It takes so much longer to edit just because there's computer glitchy stuff. And like, it's nice that the tracks are isolated. So that gives me a little leeway in a different way. Cause right now we're going to have bleed just to get nerdy. Uh-huh. So that, you know, so I can't edit out everything, but at the same time, just the sound of it kind of drives me nuts, and it relies on whoever's on the other end to have a decent setup, you know? And so, because that I wanted that from the get go. I'm a podcast nerd. Like, I love them. That's what I do on the road. The road is a perfect place for podcasts. You know, people are like, "Ooh, I wonder what movies are on the Delta thing." And I'm like, I don't care. I've downloaded like 8 podcasts. That's what I do on the airplane. That's what I do in my bunk, you know, like, so I've listened a lot. I was a huge, 'cause that's the other thing about me and many musicians, maybe, I don't know. But once you start doing this for a living, I rarely ever put on music. I do more now because I'm older and not as jaded. And I don't know, it's a weird, you know, path that I've taken, I suppose. But for when I was a kid and you started to do this for a living, music, I didn't want to hear music. After doing music all day long, doing music all night at a club, you know, I'm doing club dates most of the time. So it's like 4 hours of music, 4.5 hours of music. I wanted to go home and, you know, I'd listen to Art Bell on the way. I don't know if anybody knows that. So I was a talk radio junkie first, you know, and that's another reason I don't really do video. And other people have been like, "You got to do this video." And I'm like, I'm kind of a purist. It really stems from my fan of talk radio. And so it's a long time coming. You know, I've been thinking about it for decades, probably.
There's a lot. Every time we talk, there's a lot I realize that we have in common. And I think the shit out of things before I do them.
Right.
Really. Yeah. And I respect so much people that will just dive in and say, "I'm just doing this." And they do it.
Yeah.
You know, but I really think it through.
Yeah.
And interesting, you know, again, because episode 39 is the most recent episode prior to this one. And you were talking to Liliana. And one of the things you asked her was, "How often do you listen to music just for pleasure?" And she said, "Every day." And that struck me. Mm-hmm. And I thought, is that a little bit generational? Or, I mean, she is a pro and has been a working pro since college.
Yeah.
Right out.
Yeah.
But like you, I find that I want to engage in a lot of other things that are just life.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And like, I don't have hobbies, you know, my wife can attest to that. Like, I pretty much am, you know, previous to having a child, I was married and I do music and I drink, you know, like sometimes, you know, not so much anymore, but there was a time, you know, and like, I don't really have other interests. Like, what do you do when you're not doing music? I'm doing music. I'm doing my music. I'm producing other people's music. That's kind of my thing. But at the same time, I think the reason I like music is the humanity in it. You know, it helps me relate to other humans. And so, yeah, I guess if you wanted to have a hobby, I watch documentaries, you know, about humans, you know, and the I'm obsessed a little bit with human behavior and the human experience. And when you start, you know, my high school orchestra teacher told me as I was graduating high school, he's like, "Dude," so he knew I was going into music, and he's like, "Dude, musicians are the weirdest people you're ever going to meet." And no truer words have been spoken, but you know, it's, but you can switch that out and say interesting, you know, because that's the thing. We're all here for weird reasons, or, you know, it's an odd thing to be driven to be creative. And then when you add on the music business of it, like, you got to be a little off to want to do this for a living, honestly.
It
sounds really neat in high school, but once you get in it, you have to do it.
Well, you know, they say art is a distillation of life.
Mm-hmm.
And I've often said that, and it sounds harsh to say, but it's hard for me to completely trust anybody who is a so-called artist or in an artistic endeavor that does just that. That doesn't live life.
Right, right.
Because what else are you putting into all this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And once you get in here, it's fascinating when to meet people that are successful at it and just to know, you know, their story and how'd you get here, you know? So both my podcast and my baby were long time coming, you know, like they were not spontaneous 2020 things. And in fact, I took there's a thing called Udemy, which is like an online university. I took a course on how to make a podcast, and then I took a course on how to make a website with WordPress, because I've done every one of my websites, but I always do them differently and pull my hair out. And this time I'm like, let's just get into this WordPress because everyone uses it, blah, blah, blah. So in terms of that, I definitely... And I do research, you know, I did a lot of thinking. I do a lot of research for guests. Like, it used to be I'd do like 5 or 6 hours when I had the time. Now I've gotten faster at it because I kind of know where I want things to go. And whenever I put a person on the podcast, it's, I want to find the reason. I don't want to just tell another generic story. Oh, I went to college, I got a gig, and here I am. You know, I'm always trying to figure out, well, what's unique about this person? And in terms of all that and me, whether I'm good at this or not, the interview part, there's not a whole lot to do besides just start doing it. You know what I mean? So there was no other research other than just being a huge fan of David Letterman and, you know, growing up with Johnny Carson and like just talk radio and just listening for decades. But you don't know whether you're going to be able to do this until you just kind of do it.
Well, I am here to tell you, and I know you, I'm not the first, but you really, really are good at it. Well, you're good at it to an enviable point for me because if I am put on this earth to do anything, it's to communicate. And part of that communication is two-way conversation, a big part of it. And yet I listen to you so deftly and gracefully take people through this. You stay on top of it and you lead it, but you just inspire people to be comfortable telling their stories. You listen, and that's something that I notice. There are so many people that are especially amateur kind of interviewers that ask a question and they just don't even hear the answer.
Right.
I hear people that I know, people that I like, you know, ask the same generic questions over and over again, you know.
Right.
How old were you when you decided you wanted to be a musician?
Right.
Somebody will talk for 5 minutes and then it's, oh yeah, and when was that? How old were you? It's like, wow, you didn't listen to your guest.
Right.
And you invariably do, Eric, you know.
And that's why I call it a conversation. Because, you know, I don't know that I'm a great interviewer. Every interviewer, like at the end of every episode, for the next 2 or 3 days, I go over all the questions I should ask and all the follow-ups I should have asked and all the things that, oh, I should have explored that, you know? And like at the end of the day, I have to be like, well, it's 2 hours tops. If it's 2 hours, it's way too long. So what? It's an hour and a half. You're just not going to get everything in, you know? It's fine. You know what I mean? That's my constant, like, that's the process, you know?
The people that you interview in large part are contemporaries. They really are. They're people you know and people you've worked with. Mm-hmm. Have there been any sort of pinch me moments or any sort of, I feel like an imposter right now because I'm talking to this person? Can you tell us about any that felt that way?
Well, yeah. I mean, Lee Sklar. Yeah.
That's who I was thinking of. Yeah.
Yeah. That was amazing. And someone I'd never met. And that's the other thing about, especially in the beginning, because another part of doing this was kind of, it was 2020. I'd spent at that point 4 years with Dwight Yoakam, and I'm not previously a country player. So being in his band was great on one hand because I'm meeting all these new people, but it felt like being on an alien planet. And you know, those guys would talk about this musician and that musician and this music. And I just felt like, I don't know any of these people. And you know, as a guy who, you know, a lot of people know who I am in LA, to get us suddenly in, not to brag about it, it's just like worked really hard. And I've worked with a lot of people just because that's what you got to do to keep your living going. So, you know, to be in that situation was freaky. So when I got a year off, the first thing I start doing is going to my best friends to keep in touch because no one's working. We're all freaking out. And to document sort of my thing, I kind of knew a kid was coming along and I thought, here's a whole thing. But so Lee Sklar, and there was a couple other people that I didn't know that well, but he was the first guy that I've never even met him. So this, in terms of being an interviewer, like, all right, Baines, you're calling yourself an interviewer. Here it is. You know, how are you going to do? And this guy has seen everything, you know? So it was, that was very tricky and very intimidating at first, but at the same time, it's one of those things where it's like, I get to edit it. You know, if it sucks, I don't have to put it on. But But the thing about it was, is that he was so incredible. And he, at the end of it, like he cut, I had to cut him off. Like, I'm always worried about, I don't want to take your, too much of your time. You don't even know me. He, at the end, I was like, thank you for doing all this. I kind of had to cut him off. And then he was like, yeah, if you want to do this again, just for archival sake. And I just thought, that's great. You know, like this obviously he had a good time. I had an incredible time. You know, he told all these great stories and it was pretty amazing, you know, so he was probably the most crazy, intimidating guy. But
Lee Sklar has been trusted.
Yeah.
By so many, by all the best.
Yeah.
You are trusted by name people. You talk to Lee Sklar for a couple hours. He obviously feels like he's in good hands somewhere along the way. And that's another thing that you do in your podcast. You speak just enough to let a guest know that you understand. You have empathy. You have understanding. You've been there while never having the pretense. You never take over the conversation. I know that we're talking a lot about the podcast and I'm giving you a lot of praise here, but I think it's absolutely due. You talk to somebody like Leland Sklar, who has every story to tell, standing in the position that you occupy on a stage.
Yeah. Yeah.
And did you feel some kinship at some point and a certain amount of being a contemporary? Yes, in a way. I mean,
it's really,
is that
tricky.
A fair question?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting question. Cause it's a hard thing. First of all, my only like motivation in having anyone on this podcast is to showcase them. So I'm here to make them look as best they can and tell their great stories. And I have no interest in ambush questions, or maybe to the detriment of the show. I don't know. Maybe it could be a little more controversial. Maybe it would be more interesting, but I'm not interested in that. I'm just interested in highlighting people that have worked their lives doing what I do and trying to show people that what this life is like, you know, because a lot of people, especially people that don't live in LA or New York or Nashville, it's like, it's a mystery what goes on, you know, how do you make your living? How do you even afford to live in LA? And so I hope to give some insight into that, but you know, especially, so if I'm talking to somebody like Lee Sklar, I mean, he's so far above me in my brain. And at the same time, I'm a cocky guy to a certain degree. You have to be to get along in this town. It's a very competitive place. Do I think that I could do the gigs that Lee does? Yes, I do. Does that mean that I should respect him any less? I mean, it doesn't really matter because he's done the gigs. You know, like he's the guy. Yeah. And that's the thing. To some degree, a lot of this is time and place. He was in L.A., in the 60s and 70s when all of this stuff was being built, you know,
he experienced the Laurel Canyon era. And,
And that's to a certain degree happenstance, you know, that's not because he was the greatest player in the world. Of course, he's one of the greatest players in the world, but you know, I'm pretty good too. You know, it's a very tricky thing in talking about headspace as well, because it's like, to a certain degree, I can't let myself think that I'm never going to be as good as Lee Sklar, because then you're toast.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I also don't want to go into this interview just looking like a fan either, because that's the worst. Then you're not going to get anything out of that, I don't think. Just me being like, oh, tell me that. Oh, and that was great. You know, like to a certain degree, I want to talk to him as a bass player. But then that's nice. That's all in my head, right? But then you got his head, and you know, it was a very interesting interview in the sense that, like, for a lot of it, he seemed like a nice old man telling me mind-boggling stories. But then there's a part where he starts telling, and I can't remember the artist, telling a story of being in the studio, and the artist live band wanted to do the record, and they took a day, and the artist was like, no, let's get some real studio guys. So they call Lee in, and the other guys were like, well, can we watch? Because we want to know the difference between what we're doing and what they're doing. And when you started to hear the competitive nature of him, I got a feel for who he really is when it comes down to the business.
Yeah.
He's a very nice person. You know, I do get that vibe, absolutely. But he's where he is for a reason. You know, there's a toughness about him that's palpable.
Well, you think about what gives you longevity and survival in this business, and it's all of those things.
Yeah.
You've got to have the chops.
Yes.
You've got to show up prepared. But you have done probably everything that Lee Sklar has done, as the example we're talking about, in one way or another. He's just done it for that many more decades with that many more famous people.
Yeah.
But he's a guy that's going to get the call, sure, because you know, everybody in the world knows, call up Lee Sklar.
Yeah.
I know what I'm going to get. And I'm going to like what I'm going
to
get.
But
and
the other thing about it, not to interrupt you,
yeah,
but
no,
the
please.
Other thing about...
This is your show. You get to interrupt
okay,
me.
Okay. But the other thing about that, though, is that he also... How do you figure out how much of my bass playing comes from him? Because he was on all the records that I grew up listening to. So that's the other thing about it. It's like, I probably wouldn't be the bass player I am without him. So,
yeah.
So... where does that fall into all of this? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like,
so could I ever even come close to being the bass player that he is? Because he wrote the book on how to play bass, you know, him and Carole Kay and, you know,
yes.
you could name a handful of people that it doesn't matter how good a player they are necessarily, or what, it's just they were there doing their thing and defined what bass playing in pop music is. It doesn't, you know, they'll forever be more important than me.
And they came up in an era where there was recording and recording and recording and recording and recording and recording.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you know, you talk about Carole Kay, you talk about the Wrecking Crew, and they just by default, by being who they were at that time, where they were,
right,
they were on so many recordings that they were of such great influence.
Yeah.
That era is not now.
Right. No.
There is not that giant amount of material being recorded forever.
Well, besides that, there was nothing before them.
Yeah.
They didn't grow up listening to pop records.
Yeah.
They were inventing it. You know, like, I grew up listening to all that stuff. So, you know, it's in me because of them. Who knows what pop music would have been. Like, that's another thought that blows my mind sometimes. What if it was me? Would bass playing be different? You know what I mean? What if it wasn't Paul McCartney? You know, what if it was some other person? Would that be the standard?
Yeah.
Or was this just, some sort of human interaction to everything? Like, is this the obvious human reaction for a bass player in that moment at that time? You know what I'm saying?
No, but I love this.
It's getting very nerdy.
We're getting into the brain works of Eric Bands, which is what we need to do. The thing about this podcast is it celebrates the sung heroes, but also many of the unsung heroes, the guys that keep the machinery working, the guys that are out on tour as you are, you know, working night after night after night and having this great experience. But, you know, they're like, I look at the roster of people that you have spoken with on this podcast. And I would say, in my case, you know, probably a third of the names I've come across, I don't know, roughly speaking. Mm. And then many I haven't. And I'm thinking, these are guys that you know to be out there really, really doing good work, you know. And then, yes, there are the Lee Sklars and a few others that, everybody knows that name, you know. But not everybody's the household name, but they're the guys like yourself that decided at some point, this is what I'm going to do. Come hell or high water, this is what I'm going to do. And those are guys, too, that I think when you talk about the purpose of this podcast and you make that statement, if you are this person, or this person, this podcast is for you. And we, the listener, get to hear those road stories and hear the inspiration that got that person to where they are.
Yeah. And that's really what it started out to be. It's the unsung heroes. It's people you know, and that makes it a challenging. That's another interesting thing I've learned doing this podcast is that, you know, when you talk to an artist, they've done a million interviews and they know how to speak and they know answers to the questions most of the time. When you're talking to just a guy who's a guitar player and never dreamed of ever speaking, you know, it makes it kind of challenging to interview certain people that, you know, they don't talk for a living. Like, yeah. Even if you're an instrumentalist artist, part of your gig is to do interviews and know what to say. You know what I mean? So that's been an interesting thing, but it did start out as that. And now I'm starting to, like, Keiko Matsui was 2 episodes ago and she's the first artist, you know, cause I thought I can pull out my Rolodex and call the artists that I've worked for and see if they'll get on the show, but that's not really what the show is about. But now that it's like moving, now that my idea of the show is moving more into just human interest and like, okay, well, what is Keiko's story? You know, that now it's just about stories. So I can kind of put anybody on. And so I want to kind of do a good mix of some, to start sprinkling in some artists, you know, and you know, people I've worked for, it's fun because like I hadn't seen Keiko in 8 years. So it was nice to chat with her about all that stuff. But in the beginning, it was definitely about, and people hit me up like about the podcast, like managers and record labels. Hey, can I get my artist on your podcast? And I was like, it's not really about that. It's about the side guys and the working here, you know, the working people.
I mean, you
but it is starting to change, I guess. But that definitely, I took pride in that.
The song,
I feel like that was me for so long.
The song that you composed and recorded, Dive Bar Rockstar,
mm-hmm.
That's what came first.
Yeah, yeah, for
but
sure.
But then again, that when you decided to do this podcast, was that name, was pulling from that the obvious choice for you?
No, that was the hardest thing, was picking a name for this podcast, because I don't think that Dive Bar Rockstar really says what this is about. There's probably, but every name that I tried had already been bought, you know, the domain name. So I looked up Dive Bar Rockstar and no one had picked it. So I just thought, is that an original thought? Like, to this day, there's if you Google it, it's mostly me. Like, there was a cover band in New York for a minute called Dive Bar Rockstar. And I just thought, well, it is me. It is my thought. It is my record. And, you know, and I never really thought about it until now what that song is about. And it really is about just a guy, you know, having fun on the weekends. You know, you've got to go to his day job and it's awful. And but he gets to go to the bar and be a hero for a night or two. He's the unsung. It is about the underdog or an unsung hero, you know? So it makes more sense than maybe I thought, because originally I wanted this to be much more educational and you know, how much do you practice and what gear do you use and stuff. And it's only now since kind of moved into, well, tell me about yourself. I want to know about people. And that makes much more sense with the title. So I guess it all is working out. I used to sort of like point out, oh, so you qualify as a dive bar rock star, but it's like, it's a bigger concept and everyone is at heart, you know?
Yeah. And and it just works, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And nobody else has that name.
It's exactly.
It might be the only original thought I've ever had in my entire life. So I'm going with it.
I am waiting for one of those to happen. Everybody, especially people that have now come to know you in this podcast through your work with Chicago, everybody wants to hear about that. And so do I.
Yeah.
So, and there's everything to talk about with that act. Again, yes, you've been with Dwight, you've been with Keiko, you've played with other people of renown, but we talk about legacy acts.
Yeah.
This is a giant legacy.
It's unbelievable.
And so I want to hear about just what it is to be on those stages playing those beloved hugely known songs by the world.
Yeah.
And how that might even differ for you from other experiences of playing good songs with good people.
Yeah. Well, it's a weird gig because I never saw it coming, because I'm a good singer, but I don't sing in that Peter Cetera range. So I never.
And that's what I was wondering. I think of bass players in Chicago, I think Cetera singing and playing. Are you singing?
Or Jason Shep.
Yeah.
Okay. Now they have a dedicated lead singer.
That's what I thought.
Who's incredible, does all that Cetera stuff. And his name's Neil Donnell, and he's just phenomenal. And so now I'm doing some Bill Champlin, you know, and lots of backups, you know. So they asked for a bass player backup singer. And so I was like, yes, that's me. I can definitely do that, you know. So it was a dream come true that I never even saw coming, you know. And, you know, to be honest, I'm still a little starstruck, you know, sometimes, you know.
I love that we are doing this interview while you still are. Yeah. And I want to point out, I want to say, so you and I are sitting in this room talking right now. It's May 2nd, 2023. Mm-hmm. You've had the Chicago gig for how long at this, by this point?
This Saturday will be a year.
Okay. It's been that long. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So 1 year in and many shows and lots of travel. Yeah. The blush has not fallen off the rose.
I mean, it's only gotten better. That's the weird part. Because at first, I'm just freaking out. Don't screw up, you know? And that lasts for a minute until you really get the music in your hands I told this on the story with the podcast with Ray, I think, but I had, a sound check, which is rare, you know, because these guys don't sound check, which I love, you know, neither did Dwight. It's like, I love that. I'd rather, it'll sound fine. Let's just go kill, you know?
Yeah.
But they agreed to have a sound check because there was another song that they were still kind of rehearsing that was on the new record. So I got that, but I got lucky. So I got to do like 5 out of the 29 songs that I had to do that night. And when our first gig was at the Capitol Theater in New York, which I'd done with Dwight, and it was very familiar. Like, that's what those kind of venues that Dwight does a lot. So it felt comfortable, and I was like, okay, I got this. This is great. And so that first night, it was like, I also have a little bit of leeway. If I screw up, they're not going to care. It's my first night. I've never met you people before. You know what I mean? Like, I just got here. And Lauren wasn't even on the gig. He was out with the Who, so it was a sub in his chair. So I didn't know anybody. And that's another weird thing that people don't maybe think about. Like, when I get called for a gig, sometimes it's you're going to move in with 10 or 12 dudes that you've never met before, and you just gotta hope that you get along. And like, you're out there on your own just figuring it out, and all those nerves and all that scary stuff in your head, you just gotta stuff it and like pretend like it's not happening and go out and try to have as much fun as you can, or at least just don't screw up, you know? So anyways, that was the first night, and it went really well and it was really great. And
where was that first night?
The Capitol Theater in New York, in Westchester. And so the next night was 5,000 seat sold out arena in Mohegan Sun, and I think that's Connecticut.
Yeah, there are a couple of there's one in Pocono as well, I think.
Yeah.
Like in Pennsylvania. Anyway,
That I got out there and I thought, oh, okay, this is it, man. Like now the stage is massive, and like, you know, this isn't a show where, you know, I've played your gig. And one of the things I've said about the Eagles tribute in general is like, it's pretty great because you don't got to dress any certain way, particularly because the Eagles don't. Mm-hmm. You don't really got to dance around. You don't got to wear wigs because the Eagles stand there and they play their music and it's neat. That's not Chicago. There's like, it's not choreographed per se, but this is where you need to be for this song. Over here is where you need to be for this song. Go up on the riser for this song. I had to know all that stuff the first time I got on the stage. And then it's a show. Like, it's there. It's a high energy thing with septuagenarians. Is that the right term?
Yes. Like, people in their 70s.
Yeah. And I'm like 50 and I barely keep up with these guys. You know, they're amazing. They've been doing this their entire 56 years. They've never had a year off. Even pandemic, like, they did shows before it shut down. And then as soon as they could get back in 2021, they were doing it, you know? So these guys are just out there to kick ass and take names. And so I had to step it up. I had to get my, I had to pull out my Disney chops, my mad tea, like just be insane on stage and work 5,000 people in an arena, like pretty quick. And it's hard music, you know? So it was quite the experience. I think I forgot the question. I'm a dive bar rock star. I know I've said it many times on this podcast, but it's really important to me to pass on all the information that's been given to me over the years about how to work as a musician. Of course, we get into a lot of topics on the show, But if you'd like to learn more, there is a way to get some one-on-one time. Go to golive.ly, search for me, Eric Baines, and take a private bass lesson. I can teach you advanced bass techniques, music theory, improvisation, or we can talk about how to prepare for a gig, the best thing to wear on an audition, or the most important thing to know about living on a tour bus. I'm also offering private songwriting sessions. If you have a new song that isn't quite working, and you need some feedback from someone who's written, co-written, and placed songs on records, TV, film, and video games, I can help you with that too. All skill levels are welcome. Search for Eric Baines at golive.ly, pick a date and time, and sign up for a lesson. It's that easy. That's golive.ly, golive.ly. And I can't wait to meet you. I'd like to take a second and thank you for listening to the Dive Bar Rockstar podcast. Getting the word out is a vital part of what it takes to keep this show on the road, and the easiest way to help is to subscribe wherever you listen, and if you have an extra minute or two, please leave a review. You can also follow our page on Facebook, which is the Dive Bar Rockstar Podcast, or follow me on Instagram at Dive Bar Rockstar. Okay, enough begging. I hope you're having a great time, and once again, thank you for listening.
Okay, so that first week of shows, the first week that you're performing with them, I want you to set the stage for me, for this listening audience.
For sure.
Are you stage right?
I am stage left for most of the show, but I'm everywhere at some point.
You are. Okay. Where do you enter from when you come on stage?
Stage left.
Stage left. Yeah. Okay. I don't know if there's anybody listening that is not a theater person or a performer person, but for anybody who might not know, stage left and stage right are from the perspective of you standing on stage. So you're standing on stage, stage right is to your right, stage left is to your left. So you come in, so you're ready to go on.
Mm-hmm.
What is happening prior to you walking on the stage? And what's like, is there a giant logo projected, for example?
Oh, yeah.
So you're standing for that first show, that second show, you're in the stage left wings.
Mm-hmm. With the entire band.
With the entire band. And
we're fist bumping.
Yes.
That's our pre-show ritual.
And what's up there? Because again, you haven't rehearsed with the band. You haven't been in, you know, at center stage or third encore or some really much more giant place,
right?
You know, getting used to this entire ritual.
Right.
So you're standing in that stage left wing and you're looking at maybe, it says Chicago.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No.
And you feel 5,000 people out there.
Yeah, at that point, well, the first night really is the night, the second night, at least I knew I could play the show. I had gotten through it once. But the first night, it's a little overwhelming. Like I just had to shut it all out. Like I'm here to do a job.
Yeah.
You know, you got to get professional real fast before you lose your shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I played the show and his words, not mine. I got done. I hand my bass to the guitar tech and he goes, man, you just change this band. And I just, God, I can barely say it without crying right now, because I just thought, Eric Baines from Broomfield, Colorado, you know, just changed Chicago. You know, the thing is, it's like when you have guys that are doing the same show forever, just having a new guy, you know, is life enough, because but I came out there with a lot of energy and stuff. And so maybe whether I changed the band or not, or, you know, it was probably a nice to have a new guy and it raised the energy and everything. So my humble side would probably go with that answer. But like, just to hear those words coming off of my first show with Chicago was just, it was overwhelming, you know, but it also gave me a little boost.
I knew
I was right. That's the thing. This is probably the first and only gig of my entire career, 32 years, where I knew as soon as I started playing that I'm in the right spot. Like, this gig is mine.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
That's making me well up, actually.
Yeah. You know? And like, for me, I've made a career out of making the best of what I've got, you know, and not to put down anyone that I've played for, but it's never really been where I wanted to be. It was always a stepping stone to where I thought I wanted to be. And like, I'm a professional. I like, one of the things I say is I don't have the luxury of choosing music that I like. I got to make a living, and I can do that music. So yes, I will take that gig. You know, this is the first time I'm like, I'm just pinching myself now. I can't believe they pay me. Like, this is insane. Like, well, it's so great. And everything that I had learned in my career, every gig that I had had, even Dwight Yoakam, like leading up to there, it all, I get to do it all on this gig, you know, like everything that I am as a musician gets to happen in a night, you know? So it's pretty incredible. And it only took me 32 years of a career to get there. You know what I mean?
Well, one of my questions, you know, just coming into this, knowing we were going to have this conversation, was going to be something to the effect of, now that you're doing this show, you're part of that band, do you look back from this point on your career and say, well, everything makes sense? Everything on the path, everything on the journey makes sense. You know, you say in the bio that is your page, your bio page with Chicago, they were an influence.
Yeah.
It was played in your household, you know. Now that's pretty common. That's not uncommon to have been, you know, certainly to for musicians to be influenced by whatever their parents played and listened to. But
right.
That to be in your kind of in your DNA.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
And now, just now, say, I asked, well, what was it like, you know, could you take it all in with those first couple of shows? No, of course not.
Right.
But a year later.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, I'm also, you know, coming off of, how do I put this carefully?
I can't wait.
It's coming off of a gig that was, you know, a little bit stressful. Like, Dwight Yoakam's very high expectations, and you want to meet those when you're on the gig, you know? And again, it wasn't my forte. I mean, after 5 years of doing it, I knew how to play country music, and I learned an immense amount, and especially specifically like California country and that history and all that stuff. Amazing. But did I ever feel like we're just going to go kill this gig? There was never a night of like, oh yeah, this is going to be an easy gig. There's never an easy gig. It's all got to be great all the time. And it's got to, you know, it's a different type of thing, you know, standing on stage, I'm just trying to focus. I've never focused that hard, you know, on any gig. And, you know, so to come off of that into a gig where they're just like, dude, have fun. Like, you can't screw up, you know, it's not like that. But again, it's music it's in my DNA. So it's, you know, it took a vast amount of preparation, don't get me wrong, but now that it's in my, so anyways, it took me a second just to relax into that idea, into this real, to trust the idea that they're serious. No, just go out and have fun. It's really important to this gig that you are having fun on stage, you're engaged with the audience. And there's even been, you know, moments in time when, you know, I've been reprimanded for not rocking hard enough. And I'm like, okay, well, I can do that. I can rock hard. You know,
uh-huh.
I mean,
yes.
You know, we'll, you know, and it's just such a great, that's just so much fun. I don't even know how to,
but that also,
I don't
says,
know other words for it.
That speaks a lot to, you know, to them as an organization, because sure, as you said, you know, it's been 56 years. They've figured it out, but they also know how to hire.
Yeah.
You're a good hire. They knew after that first show and you handed your bass to the tech and he said, dude, you just changed this band. And that came, that wasn't blowing smoke up your ass. That was something that he really thought in that moment, because he had been on the road with them. He knows what that band is. They know. And they knew from that first show on. Yeah, we hired well. We can trust this guy.
Yeah.
And that, and to be able to them say, you can have fun, because they know you know what you're doing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
They know you've done the homework.
Well, I think more importantly is like, you have to. That's the vibe of the show.
Yeah.
You know, it's a show. It's not, we're not standing here playing our music. We're putting on a show.
Yeah.
You know, and we do two sets with an intermission. In fact, I talked to Jimmy Panko, the trombone player, about this when I first got in the band. It's like, it feels more like a Broadway show than it does a rock concert, because it's very, the show's designed really well. Like, it's a lot of the early stuff in the first set that's notey. And it's like, as the show goes on, the songs get a little easier to play. They're a little more the hits, you know. The second set kind of plays itself in a way, because it's just all hit after hit after hit after hit, till you finally get to the last song and it's 25 or 6-4, which is just a jam. Like, it, not a lot of stuff happens in that song musically, so you're just jumping around, freaking out, having a good time, because there's not a lot to play, you know. It's like a genius way that the show is built. Like, it just, I can't come off stage and not feel amazing. Like, it's the weirdest situation. I think I am going to chalk it up a lot to just the way the show is designed, because yeah, you end with just a total rock jam that everyone in the world has waited the entire show to hear. Like, it's genius, you know.
I love
it's fun for us, it's fun for them, and you can't get off of that stage and be like, oh God, we got to do this tomorrow. You get off the stage and it's like, I cannot wait to do this tomorrow. And my wife is just thrown off, because I'm usually calling home. It's like, oh, this happened and this and that and blah, 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 blah. And she's like, well, how was the show? And I'm like, I can't believe how much fun it is. I just can't believe how much fun I'm having out here. Like, I have nothing to say. It was amazing again. And it was a blast.
And I love everything you're telling me, because first of all, I'm going through, I don't think I've ever seen Chicago live.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't wait to especially I've actually get to see Dwight for the first time this month.
Oh, cool.
I think live. And
nice.
It's a double edge, because I wish you were in it. And I'm so glad on the other hand that you're not, because of this conversation, everything you're talking about, you know, this perfect storm, you know.
Yeah.
And but what a great thing to be, as you know, you and I sat here in episode 14. In fact, my episode was entitled something like, we're not in the music business, we're in show business.
Right.
And that's what Chicago is. They know we are a show. We have to be a show.
Yeah.
We have to, a show manipulates an audience that is paying to walk in and be manipulated and saying, please manipulate me. Please,
yeah,
please pull me, stir up my emotions. What a bitchin' thing.
Yeah.
To be doing a gig where you are every bit as manipulated and swept up in it.
Yeah.
But as the audience says, simply by doing the job that you innately know how to do.
I mean, I'm such a fan that I just don't think that it would. I love bringing my fandom to the gig, honestly. That's the thing that helps me, because I also talk about, maybe I have, I don't know, but as a sideman, my job is to make the artists look as great as they can possibly look. That's my goal, which I think makes me a good podcaster too, because that's I'm just taking this and putting it in a different situation. I'm here to showcase people, you know. I want to help you make yourself look amazing. So to be in a band that I absolutely love, it's just so much easier, you know. And it's like, these guys are celebrating 56 years of touring every night. It's a celebration of their legacy, really. Neil introduces the band, and that's what he says in the beginning. He thanks the crowd, not, you know, first of all, for choosing to be here tonight, but you didn't just come to a rock concert. You came to a celebration of the music of the band Chicago, you know, and that's what it feels like every night. And that's why I think I feel like it's a privilege to be there for that, you know, and to stand next to Robert Lamb and just be like, you're a hero and I get to play your music like you want me to, like you wanted to, you know. He's happy with the way I play the music. You know, I'm not there to be me on the gig necessarily. It just happens to be what I do fits the gig. But I'm there to honor the records. I'm there to honor Peter Cetera and Jason Sheffer, whoever the bass player was on the record, you know, and that's what makes it fun for me. Cause I genuinely love the music, and I don't know. It's a trip, because the thing is too, it's like, I've been on gigs where I love the music before too, but maybe the pay is not so great, or maybe, you know, it's, you know, This is just so many elements coming together. They've been on the road for 56 years. They know what they don't like. You know, this thing is a tightly run ship, and it's just, there's nothing to complain about. The crew, they have a large crew, and everyone knows their job, and it's done super efficiently. The hotels are great. The after food, you know, the after show food is phenomenal. Like, everything is just right. These guys know that they live on the road, so they want to be comfortable. And although I'm not a member of the band, I never know it. Like, wow. It feels like a band. And that's another weird thing too, is like, I've played with mostly artists, you know, so these guys, we walk through the airport together, you know, and like, people don't recognize them per se, because Chicago's not been about the face. It's been about the logo.
Yes.
And it's been about the music. So these guys, you know, they're just the most normal musician dudes. And that's the funny thing. Like, when I first talked to Lee on the phone, Lee Lockney, the trumpet player, I said, yeah, well, I've already been practicing. He's like, of course you are. You're a musician. And it's like, it was a relief, because other situations that I've been in have been more like, you know, some artists are not college trained musicians. They're great singers. They're great songwriters. They're great at making music that's incredible. But the way they communicate about the music is not necessarily music school. These guys went to music school. You know what I mean? And they're these famous guys that have written some of the most famous music of all time. And like, you know, the hits are so it was just a much more, it's just a really comfortable place to be. I feel like I'm amongst my people, and everyone's treated so well. It's like, I've never been a part of a band, you know? So to be treated as a part of the band, and to have fans be like, that's Eric Baines from Chicago, and they want to talk to me, and they want me to sign their stuff. And like, you know, I sign every poster, and like, that's a different experience for me as well. You know, yeah. I'm not just a side man. I'm a guy that's, you know, important to the fans. And then the fans are so intense, man. They're so great, so amazing. And they just took me in. Like, I was nervous about it, you know, cause it's big shoes to fill. And, you know, I remember at the Mohegan Sun gig, or it might have been, it was probably 6 or 7 gigs in, but it was another arena. And I kept looking down, and there was a guy looking at me. And I was like, okay. And I'm like, oh, great, here we go. You know, and I'm not sure what fans are going to be like, you know. And he's looking at me, and it was like 3-4 songs go by. And finally, I just stare him down. I just look right back in the eye, right back in his eyes. And he looks up and he goes, welcome.
Oh,
and I mean,
so he was a fan.
That's how they've all been. It's like, yes, you're so great. We're so happy to have you in the band. It's insane. Chicago cares about their fans, and their fans care about them. That's the most important thing I think I've learned about this is how important that fan base is, because we just did, I think, 12 shows on the last run, like 2.5 weeks. Every show sold out. Several of them are 5,000 to 7,000 people, 56 years in. And yeah. Why? Because they care about the fans. They treat them. It's a give and take. It's a big, huge, amazing family.
We're talking about hotels. We're talking about the experience. Mm-hmm. And again, something that couple of things I'm going to ask about that you mm-hmm. talked about, addressed in just the last most recent episode. Mm-hmm. You talked about how this gig and its cushiness really is ideally suited to you, yeah. Because I don't remember exactly what you said. Basically, you're just a kid, you're an infant, you're a child, you're an adolescent, sort of like that, kind of like the being taken care of aspect of it.
Right.
And yeah. You also talk about just how, you know, touring allows you to see parts of the world. At my little level of operation in what I do, obviously there's not anywhere near that degree of support. You know, I have to do sound checks and I have a lot of responsibility on my shoulders. So I can go to I get to go to Bermuda next week for the second time, and I won't get to enjoy much of it because it'll be all work.
Right.
But you don't have to do a sound check when you have a great crew and a great sound engineer and all the same proprietary equipment that you use every time.
Right.
But you also spoke to, there's a schedule that I know all I have to do is show up for the lobby call.
Yeah.
So you get to enjoy life too. You get to enjoy your down and off time.
Yeah. And not every artist is like that, you know, but this band is very much, you know, we show up an hour and 15 before the show. We do a meet and greet. We eat dinner. We get dressed. We kill for 2.5 hours. We get on the bus. We go. You know what I mean? Like, it's very that, which I love, because that, you know, I want, you know, some of the acts, you show up 4 or 5 hours before the gig, and you do the sound check, which, you know, if it's a, I don't hate every sound check, but there's a certain type of sound checks that, you know, like certain people, I don't remember. I don't think this is not you,
but certain people want
to play the whole show,
and
let's play this song. And you do 10 tunes for the sound check. It takes an hour and a half, 2 hours. And then you're stuck at the venue for 3 hours before the show. And it's like, to try to get your mind up for all that amount of time, you know, it messes with the, and look, it's a luxury. Like I say, they have a large crew. Everything's perfect every night. Like, that's not a lot of people have that, obviously.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that everyone should do it that way or even could, you know, but when it's that way, it's so nice. Cause like, when I leave the hotel at like 6:30, everything's just aiming for that stage. You know what I mean? Like, everything in my mind can just be flowing towards that first note. And like, my brain gets focused on that, and I don't have to try to stay in that for 5 hours before we play. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just like, okay, there we go. Here's the routine. And you get to the point where it's like, even if we have an hour until the show, then you're like, oh, why'd we get here so early?
You know, and you're talking about this, and it's, you know, you were talking again with Liliana de los Reyes about, you know, in your list of, okay, I have some questions. Mm-hmm. Do you feel you've arrived? And she said,
right.
No. And she referenced Beyonce talking about the very same thing.
Right.
And while, yeah, you're always learning, who knows where you will be 5-10 years from now, but it sounds like if you have your choice, you'll be doing this gig if you can. And yet, yeah. When you're talking about milestones, mile markers, and places to land, you know, you're 7 years old, you're 8 years old, and you're thinking, I want to be a musician. You couldn't have even begun to imagine this level of satisfaction.
Yes.
You dream of loving it, but the appreciation that you have for the work you have now as an adult experienced player, mm-hmm. 32 years into a career.
I think it's tricky because I wanted to be Elton John. You know, I wanted to be the star. So I guess this is probably, for now, the closest I've ever gotten to it, you know, and that's what's neat. I get to sing a song.
Yeah.
In Chicago. Sometimes two. So that's pretty close to being a star, you know, but it also, hopefully, you know, that can, so I guess that would be the only, I never would have seen this coming for sure. And, but at this stage in my life, it's like, I think turning 37, 38, that realization of, oh man, this is not going to happen. I'm not going to be Eric Bain's MTV star. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That was just devastating for a few years, you know, just letting go of that. And I think that's an interesting thing about this. I talk about this with my wife too, is that if it's in you, I don't know, it's never going to go away. I'm always going to want to be the star. You know, I'm a songwriter. I've got records out. I want, in an ideal world, I'd be the guy, you know, writing the soundtrack to your life. You know what I mean? But, you know, for a bazillion reasons that who knows, you know, that didn't happen. And yet, maybe, but I still have hope for that. So anyways, to be this close and have an opportunity to be recognized as Eric Baines, the bass player for Chicago, it's like, I'm going to ride this out for as long as I can because it's just amazing and beautiful. But it also can maybe set me up to have some sort of, you know, solo career, you know, even on a tiny scale, just to have that experience as well. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
No one could cause enough pain to make me confess to anything. Time of safety and freedom to be whatever your young heart desires and your mind can dream. I wanna be strong. I wanna be together. Let's build us a castle with pebbles and stones, with views of our kingdom and two mighty thrones. Let's lock out the forces that shoot through our hearts and fight for each other till death do us part. We were destined to be. And I would lay down my soul. I will give you my heart if you marry me. Oh,
oh. Yeah. But I think, you know, if you were Eric Mains, the rock star, pop star right now, those phone calls to your wife after a show might be very different.
Oh,
because
sure.
Yeah, it would be incredible spotlight on you in every sense. But man, if you were that and operating at that level, you know, you're Taylor Swift. Well, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. I mean, she's got things I think pretty well together, but
right.
you're thinking about, there's payroll. I employ 200 people or whatever.
Right. For
you
sure.
know, mm-hmm. Boy, that's a yeah. lot. That's a big, you know, you look yeah. at this gig right now and you can be having the time of your life. And now a year in, you don't have to worry and you can still come home and just completely be a dad to your son and enjoy
yeah.
that
yeah.
without even think about the business.
Yeah. yeah. And that was one thing about 2020 that was beneficial for me as well, as that I got this sense of peace. You know, Dwight Yoakam, I was with Keiko Matsui for 12 years and she's lovely. She's amazing. She's got incredible fan base, but it's a niche thing. So I spent a lot of time explaining to people who Keiko Matsui was, you know? So I was always like, before I get done, and you know, I'm getting burnt. I've been doing this since I was 19. Like, that's it. And I've never had a day job. And it's not been the easiest road. And LA is not the easiest town to live in and like to support yourself playing music. So I'm always kind of thinking, okay, well, maybe this is it. And what else can I do? You know, because, you know, on your down days. And so I was always like, I just want to play for one artist before I'm done that someone's heard of, you know, you know, that I don't have to explain. And then along came Dwight Yoakam and served that purpose completely. Like, no matter who you are, you've heard of Dwight Yoakam because he is an actor as well, you know, so he reaches a lot of people. And that was amazing. So when I kind of hit that mark and then 2020 happens and I realized, gosh, this is just... It was the greatest year of my life. I hate saying that because it was devastating to so many people, but I got on the unemployment. Luckily I had W-2 income. So I got the unemployment and like I was good. I had kept my overhead pretty low anyway. So it was like, I realized that retirement is going to suit me and, you know, sitting by my pool every day with a glass of wine or whatever. And it was great. And then I had time to make a baby and that all started and being home for all of that. And that would have never happened. I mean, who knows if I would have even been in town when the baby came, had it not been for 2020,
yeah.
you know? So, anyways, but I think what happened was I just felt this sense of peace that I'd never felt before ever in my entire life. And I felt like if this is it, this is amazing. And to, for the first time in my life, not have that need to get to the next thing or to succeed on a different level. Or like, I was just like, nah, I pretty much did it, you know? So whatever happens after this is just bonus. And I could do whatever I want now because I just don't, ever since I was born, I've had this drive to do this. And that's what it takes to get this far in a really rough business, you know? And then when that sort of went away, it was such a relief. And then it made it more fun. And then all of a sudden this call comes and it's beyond, I mean, it's just like, extra bonus, you know, like it's just so great, you know, but I don't think I would have enjoyed it the same 10 years ago when I was still feeling the pressure of like, am I going to be a star or how am I going to work that out? Or what's the next big gig or what's this and that? This is just like, oh, this is perfect. I love the music. I love the tour. They don't go out for more than like 3-4 weeks at a time. So I can still do this with the kid. It's just a different experience than I've ever had because of that combination of things. One, it's a great dream come true gig. Two, I don't care as much anymore. I can really just sit back and be like, this is awesome. I can appreciate it in the moment and not be thinking about what's the next move.
You know what I mean? We learn gratitude, don't we, if we let ourselves.
And it's a different kind of gratitude. That's the other thing. I think that's the thing. It's a deeper sense of like, I can't believe this is happening versus like, thank God I got this gig. You know, there's a desperate kind of gratitude that's like.
And knowing that you do, as you say, you're exactly where you need to be, mm-hmm. or should be.
Yeah.
You earned it. You deserve it. You're qualified for
exactly.
it. It's not accidental.
No.
You know, we can talk about, you know, manifesting all those kinds of things,
yes,
you know,
absolutely.
And you did in one way or another through the life that you led, you know, the universe is unfolding as it should. You were just talking about that these are trained musicians that you're playing with in Chicago. Mm-hmm. One would have to be to play that music,
right.
to have written that music, to mm-hmm. compose it, to understand it.
Yeah.
And in the last episode, you were talking about the fact that you feel that music education is important.
Mm-hmm.
My father was a music educator. My parents were both trained musicians. I grew up around educated musicians. I didn't absorb a lot of it. I took it for granted.
Mm-hmm.
So my knowledge of theory, my ability to read, just blows all of it. But again, you were talking about how you think it is important. It definitely has value. You know, again, I keep referencing Liliana because it was the most recent episode and the one that I've heard the most recently. And, you know, she talked about how, well, she chose it because she wanted the college experience and she knows
right.
its value, but also thought, well, you know, but there are a lot of very famous, very successful musicians that don't read, are not formally trained, George Benson being one of them.
Yeah.
But he was the creator of what he's doing. You can be that.
Yeah.
But then to be a supporter and to be somebody who joins a legacy show after all that time, I got to think, what level of confidence does your knowledge of music, your ability to read, what has that given you through your career?
I mean, it's been vital. But I started as a jazz guy, and you kind of can't, I don't want to say you can't, George Benson's a good example, but I do think that there's two paths, and this is what I used to tell younger people too. It's like, because it would drive their parents crazy because, oh, my son wants to drop out of college and start a band. Well, there is this theory that like music school turns people into clones. It kind of goes against creativity, you know, because you're digging so much into the technical aspects of stuff. And that absolutely happens, I think. And I think that's another part of the educational process is shedding all of that music school stuff and just becoming a musician again and letting that leak into what you do creatively. But if you're going to be Nirvana, don't go to school. You know, if you want to be that, then buy a van and a PA and get in your garage and create that product, you know, that people are going to love, that because that music is more about personality than it is technique. If you want to be a sideman, if you want to work for a living, you know, you need skills. If you're going to rely on music because that's also rolling the dice, making that band and getting in that van. You know what I mean? You don't know if you're going to make it. So, but you have a better chance of getting super rich. At least you used to. Now, who knows? But you have a better chance of being in much more control of your career. You know, there's all kinds of benefits from paying those kind of dues and doing that. And if that's where you want to go, yeah, don't waste your time in music school, because what you need to figure out is your sound and what is your voice. You know, why should people care about you? You know, what do you have to offer that's going to be relevant in people's lives? You know, that's a different type of thing than you're going to get in music school.
Well, your next gig could be one that's a reading gig.
Yeah,
you know, it may not be.
No,
hey,
I,
while we were off in December, I went and played a few weddings and read my butt off with strings behind me. And like, you know, they still can do those things. And that's the other thing I say a lot. It's like the more skills you have, the more gigs you can take. And that's, yeah, as a working guy, that's what I need to have. I need to know how to play as many genres of music as I possibly can. I've done Iranian gigs, you know, and like just crazy stuff, you know, klezmer, you know, and those are all just gigs that I can take to make the money when I need to. If that's the path you want, I would highly recommend music school. Not to mention the pressure that you get from a college experience and going through that college experience. It's just not even just about the skills that you're going to acquire. It's the experience of that pressure and the and having to go to class every day and the discipline that it's going to take to get through that. That's going to change you as a human and make you, give you some other types of skills that are going to matter out here, you know, and not to mention the people you meet. And that's the thing. I came out here, I went to Berkeley for 3 semesters in Boston. And then I went to Metropolitan College of Denver for a year after that. So I never finished. And that's probably why I obsess over it, because it's just my biggest failure in life, you know?
You're going to get an honorary master's degree, I think.
I hope so. We'll see. We'll see. But that 2.5 years of college, like, I understand college and why it's great and why it's important. I just was a punk kid who didn't fit well in school and wanted to work so badly, and then just started working and dropped out. But when I got to LA, I went to Berkeley, so I can immediately call the Berkeley office here and they give you a list of names and numbers to all the Berkeley people out here, and you immediately get connected. And that's another thing that college gives you. It's the connections that, and if you do it right, like if I loved Boston, which I did, but it wasn't really where I was going to end up. The weather just can't handle it. But people that go to MI, it's a way to get you to Los Angeles too. And you start going to school, learning skills, meeting people in Los Angeles that are connected and all of that. You know, Liliana is a great example. Besides right. having a family, she also was taken from Patrice Russian, like, who works gigs around town and like knows everybody, you know? But I never blame somebody who's like, I'm going to start a band and be the next big thing. Well, that's what you need to do. College is probably not going to give you that experience.
You know, the title of this probably won't be buy a van and a PA and getting in a garage. I bet you're not rolling it out.
Yeah. No. I have ultimate respect for it. At the end of the day, I make my living off the guys who did that. And that's right. The thing that I have to respect all the time.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't play for 56 years. I get to go and reap all the benefits of these guys that lived in those vans and like, you know, Chicago, when they moved to LA, they lived in a house together, you know, they rehearsed every single day and they busted their ass. And these guys are known for touring. Like, they used to be out 300 plus dates a year.
Jeez.
Like, they have paid dues in a way that I didn't want to.
Yeah. You know? Have you, can I assume you perform with the band in Chicago?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I mean,
is there
something special about?
Oh, it's crazy. You know, it's an important band for that city.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, and they should be.
Yeah, absolutely. CTA, right?
Yeah.
Eric, congratulations on.
Well, thank you.
On the milestone of 40 episodes, you know, as arduous as that's been, on this podcast, which I love and so many other people do. And I don't know how big your audience is right now, but it's only growing.
Yeah.
And then just congratulations on your life, man. It's a really good life. And I'm so, I'm impressed with where you are, you know. I'm shaking your hand. We were shaking hands right now. We're actually shaking hands.
That's true. We couldn't do that the last time we talked because it was 2020.
I know.
Stay away.
And thanks again for, you know, of all the people that asked to do this, you know, for at least allowing me to be the first to, you know, switch chairs with you.
And I appreciate it so much, man. And you were a fan from early on, and,
I was.
And that always means a whole lot when someone that you care about their opinion likes the show. Mm. You know what I mean? So
I really
appreciate you being here and doing this, and this was awesome.
The pleasure is more mine than anything. Yeah. Okay. Have the last word. You have to have the last word.
Me? No, it's you're the host.
Oh, I am.
Well, I don't know. Do I always have that last word?
Well,
I don't know.
Okay. Well, ladies and gentlemen, for the Dive Bar Rockstar Podcast, episode number 40, we say good night.
Good night.
Even if you're listening to this.
Good night, Beantown.
Dive Bar Rockstar.
Well, I will say it's been interesting being on the other side of the interview and feeling some of the anxiety that I'm sure some of my guests have felt. I have a newfound compassion and understanding for what they go through, because it's surprisingly vulnerable when the show's about you. And I didn't understand that, but I do now. You know, I also have the power to edit, so it's not exactly fair, but I would like to take the opportunity to thank everyone who's been a part of the show and everyone who's participated, because I couldn't do it without guests, and everyone's been just incredible, you know? And so I hope it hasn't been too unbearable for anyone who has been on the show. I also wanted to clarify that I in no way wanted to say that my career could even hold a candle to Leland Sklar's career. I was kind of only speaking to the mindset of competing in the music business and to the mindset that I needed to be in to interview him. But I have nothing but the utmost respect and admiration for the man and his musicianship and his unbelievable contribution to music and pop music and recorded music. You know, he's a true hero to me, and it was nothing but a total joy to interview him. The guitar tech that travels with us for the band Chicago, his name is Aaron Mikowski, and he does Tony Obrada's guitars as well as my basses. And he also has his own podcast called Parking in Bitterman Circle, where he interviews other techs on some of his episodes, and sometimes he just reports from the road as he travels. And it's a pretty fun ride, so check that out wherever you get your podcasts. Mad Tea was a show that I did at Disney, Disney's California Adventure, actually, that required me to develop some, you know, high-energy show chops. So you can hear all about that on some other episodes of the podcast. And Art Bell was the host of a radio talk show called Coast to Coast, which airs currently, actually, from like midnight to 5 a.m. all over the country. It's syndicated. And it's a show about aliens some nights and ghosts and paranormal stuff and some fun conspiracy theories and crazy stuff like that. So it was the perfect show to listen to on the way home from a bar gig at 2:30 in the morning. I'm not usually up that late anymore, but the show is still on, and it's hosted now by George Norrie, who took over the show when Art retired. Art Bell passed away in 2018. Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and I want you to know that I really appreciate all the listeners out there, and I thank you so much, and I'll talk at you next time.
I'm a dive bar rock star.
Wow, you've made it to the end. I'm hoping it's because you completely enjoyed yourself and are now filled with knowledge and inspiration to move forward with your dreams. If that is the case and you would like to stay informed of new episodes, live events, and general news, please go to divebarrockstar.com and sign up for the mailing list. If you have any questions, comments, corrections, or complaints about anything you hear on the show, please email me at fanmail@divebarrockstar.com, and you may even end up on the show. We at the Dive Bar Rockstar Podcast, with all of our hearts, thank you for listening, and remember, it's all about dreams.